Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks Saturday, July 30th, 2016. This is episode 1309. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to more than 100 job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/TechGuy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo is my number. 888-827-5536. How are you today? Good to see you. 8888 Ask Leo. We could talk about many things today. Many things today. I don't know if you care about financials. I don't. In fact, you know, I don't allow myself to invest in technology stocks for just to make, you know, to avoid any appearance of conflict of interest. You know, if I had stock in any particular company, then you might doubt or question my credibility when I'm talking about that company or even that sector, because I might say something about a competitor that is motivated by financial greed. So I just don't do it. I just don't do it. On the other hand, I don't really care about finance that much. It doesn't. It's not really the what we talk about here. We talk about technology, how to use it, which technologies work well for users, which don't, which companies work well for users, which don't, how new technologies might change our lives, that kind of thing. And the stock market seems to have precious little to do with that. It's about financial speculation, with one exception: a company that is a publicly held company. And of course, the new companies tend not to be. Uber's not publicly held. You know, they don't have stock yet. But the companies that are publicly held, like Google, Apple, Twitter, Microsoft, they need to do well in the stock market for one reason only, because they want their stock to be useful for hiring new talent. And if you're a young, smart person just getting out of school, and you're weighing your different job options, I think 90% of your decision probably, I would hope, is is this a job that's going to fulfill me? I'm going to enjoy it. Am I going to learn here? Am I going to make a difference here? But some small part of you will be concerned with, well, and what's the compensation plan? And of course, these publicly held tech companies, stock options are a very important part of that. So Facebook and Apple and Twitter, and they pay attention to their stock price only because a strong stock, a stock that's growing, is a strong incentive to new hires. And I don't even think that's a major decision. I would hope it's not a major decision. The best people are going to want to come to you because you're going to give them a chance to do something interesting. I'm almost certain that's the case. You know, anybody who's motivated by the stock price probably isn't the person you really want to hire at a startup anyway, right? maybe at the higher level, the executives, you know, the compensation packages, they have to be rich these days, don't they, to woo away that perfect CEO, maybe there. But I don't think anybody comes to work every day at Apple and says, gosh, you know, I'm only working here for the stock. Nevertheless, companies do pay attention to that. And so for that reason, and that reason only, we do pay attention to this particular week, the silly season, where all the companies tell us how they're doing, and then we get to see, you know, how the stock market reacts. So I'll give you a couple of the highlights. One of the most interesting ones, Amazon almost doubled, no, not quite, 47% growth in employees. So that's not doubling, but a lot. It's a thirding. They almost a thirded their to 268,000 employees. They hired 23,000 employees in the second quarter alone. What are they doing? 85,000 new employees at Amazon in the last year. What are they doing? What are they up to? Most of this comes from operations, of course, building new fulfillment facilities, increasing capacity, adding new capabilities. They now have day, you know, single day delivery and, you know, same day delivery, things like that. But wow. Amazon also very strong profits and all that stuff. So there's a company on the march. Are you surprised? No, I'm not. I'm not. Alphabet. Now, here's a little bit of a surprise. Google did very well. I think people, I include myself, look at Google and say, well, that's a, believe it or not, that's an old school tech company, Google. I know. That's it. Those are the old guys. Search, you know, is the future, what's the future of search? It's very different than going to a page and typing a search query in. But Google, I think, has handled that quite well, the transition to mobile and so forth. Advertising growth is strong. Revenue growth strong. 21% increase in revenue. 21% increase in revenue year over year. Their operating margin went up. I mean, this is also a company on the move, doing quite well. Net income. Well, if you use generally accepted accounting practices, which seem to me, since they're generally accepted to be the way to do that, they call it GAAP. Their GAAP income was $4.8 billion, almost $4.9 billion this last quarter. Nice, good. You know, that's all right. Sure, why not? If you do their way of calculating the net income, which I guess takes into account things like currency fluctuation, $5.8 billion. Now, there's some question about the tax situation here. And a number of people have started to come down. Facebook has been told by the IRS that they owe $6 billion in taxes, more than they paid. Facebook, Google, Apple, pretty much all the biggest companies, not just tech, but biggest companies, have been doing a little something that is completely legal. No one is saying it's not legal. Well, I guess the IRS is. They're saying, well, maybe the way you didn't wasn't completely legal, but is a little bit sketchy. And I saw somebody yesterday complaining about Apple, because Apple essentially assigns most of its profit to a few hundred employees working out of Ireland. Why? Because the Irish corporate tax rate is considerably less than the U.S. corporate tax rate. And so Apple doesn't have to pay taxes on Irish income at the U.S. rate. They pay it at the Irish rate. And it's how they keep their taxes down and save billions of dollars, but also take billions of dollars out of the United States Treasury. And as this person, I'm going to look up the article because I want to quote it accurately, pointed out that it's called the double Dutch. And Nobel winning economist Joseph Stiglitz was on TV. He called it a fraud, essentially. Didn't assert that it was illegal, but he says the U.S. tax law that allows this is, quote, obviously deficient. He says, here we have the largest corporation in capitalization, not only in America, but in the world, bigger than GM at its peak, claiming that most of its profits originate from a few hundred people working in Ireland. That's a fraud. A tax law that encourages American firms to keep jobs abroad is wrong. And I think we can get a consensus in America to get that changed. Essentially, what Apple and other companies do is they say, well, they assign the intellectual property to Irish Holding Corporation, and then the bulk of profits are ascribed to that Irish Holding Corporation, where the corporate tax rate is 12.5%, almost a third what they'd have to pay in the U.S., 35%. Even the European Union is wondering, is Ireland violating rules by helping Apple and other companies with lower tax? It's called the Irish sandwich. There's a name for it, and it's legal. I'm not saying it's illegal, but it helped propel Apple again to record earnings. That and the cheap iPhone. Turns out the iPhone SE helped keep, because you knew that Apple was not going to sell a lot of new iPhones with a new one coming in the fall. Didn't matter, because a lot of people wanted the less expensive iPhone. Revenue for the quarter for Apple, amazing, Actually, this is fourth quarter. I apologize. Fourth quarter. The third quarter revenue, $42 billion, and profit, 38%. Better than Google. They're doing quite well, making a lot of money. But are they paying their fair share in taxes? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll talk about it when we come back. Leo Laporte, your call's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-ASK-LEO. If you've got a question, if you've got a comment, if you've got a suggestion, I'd love to hear from you. So yesterday at midnight, the end of the line on the free upgrade for Windows 10. Oh, I hope you're not hitting yourself in the forehead now saying, oh, it's too late. You want to get Windows 10. If you're a Windows 7 or 8 user, you need now to pay $120. And Microsoft will be glad to take a check, credit card, PayPal. But you ain't getting it for free. Unless you use the assistive technologies in there. And Microsoft is, I'm happy to say, being a little bit more reasonable in that regard. And I thank Golem in the chat room for giving us a link to the Microsoft page for this. Free upgrade for customers who use assistive technologies. For the general public, the free upgrade offer for Windows 10 ends July 29th. If you use assistive technologies, you can still get it even after the general public deadline expires. So I'm not sure what you need to do to prove that you're using it. The reason is that, of course, people are dependent. If you, for instance, use a screen reader, you're dependent on that for Windows, and you still want to upgrade. You have to wait till your screen reader is upgraded. So the idea is, well, since the third parties weren't able to upgrade their software fast enough, we're going to give you a little extra time. Not sure how much extra, and I'm not sure how you demonstrate to Microsoft that you qualify, but there you go. We'll put a link in the show notes to that page. The show notes are at techguylabs.com. We're now waiting for those of you who did upgrade to Windows 10 for a big upgrade, or at least a somewhat big upgrade. They call it the anniversary update. This is what's going to happen from now on. We think, we hope, Microsoft promises. No more blandishments to upgrade to Windows 10. That's it. It's over. Those ads will slowly disappear. I don't know why they're not disappearing right away, but they, because I guess it was a hard computer science problem. I don't know. But they will slowly, over the next week or so, the get Windows 10 stuff will slowly fade from your computer. If you do see it and you accept it, you'll be asked for $120. Those who accepted it now still have, you know, you have 30 days from the time you accept it to roll back to your previous version. And you can roll back and forth now. you can go back to Windows 7 or Windows 8.1 if you want. And take Windows 10 anytime in the future you've qualified for it. As long as you've activated for Windows 10, your machine is a Windows 10 machine. Those of you, and most people will stay. There's no reason not to unless something doesn't work. So most of you will stay. If you stay, you're going to get an update. And you can delay it, but you can't put it off. This is the new deal. Part of the upgrade, part of getting Windows 10 means you can no longer refuse updates. And that makes sense in the sense that these are, I would hope, all security updates. And that's, you know, it's good for everybody if you keep your computer up to date. There are ways you can disconnect from the internet. And there may be other ways. There will, I'm sure, be other ways that you can modify your system. But you agree, if you read that long EULA, which no one did, but if you read the end user license agreement, you agreed, I will take updates from ever. Microsoft says 2 to 3 times a year they're going to do big updates. But they're going to keep your Windows 10 up to date. You're done. Windows 10, that's it. The last Windows. From now on, Microsoft continues to update it freely into the future. And, of course, if you buy a new computer, it'll have Windows 10 on it and on and on and on. Let's hope all goes well. it's a big burden. Microsoft has a billion Windows 10 users, I think they said. Is that right? Can that be right? No, it's not right. 350 million, I apologize. They were hoping for a billion by next year. They're saying now, hey, it's not going to happen. There are many more than a billion users of Windows. Windows 10 is not even half the population at this point. If you have questions, if you have issues, this is the place, 8888-ASK-LEO. I think Windows 10 is a good upgrade. If you did it, you should be happy with it. And they say August 2nd, Tuesday, you will get your first big update, the anniversary update, which adds Cortana features, adds pen capability. You can take notes with a pen if you have a touch screen. A few other things. Heather Hammond is here, the phone ranger. She is taking the calls, and we have a full board, it looks like. Who should I start with here?
It's true. It's true. Related to what you were just saying, we have Sunny in Sierra Madre.
Oh, Sunny. Which line is that? Five?
Sorry, yeah, five.
There you go. I see it. Sunny, are you the treasure of Sierra Madre?
You guessed it.
Nice to talk to you.
Thank you. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thanks for calling.
You bet. Have a brand-new Lenovo IdeaPad iCore 7.
Nice, and it came with Windows 10, of course.
It came with Windows 10.
Yeah.
Told it could be partitioned, and I could also, on this 1-terabyte machine, have my Windows 7 Ultimate installed.
Yes.
Did that.
Yes.
But I cannot use the Windows 7 without this thing that looks like a UCLA shield in gold and blue coming down, saturating the screen, and I about every 10 minutes, and I literally am unable to use.
What is the shield Windows. Saying?
Nothing. It's from Microsoft. There is no message.
There's no text?
It just says, Windows 10 now. Windows 10 now.
Oh, they're trying to get you to upgrade still. So here's what you do. First of all, this will go away. We call it GWX, or Get Windows 10, and it will go away over time. Now, it's baffling to me that Microsoft didn't, in this whole process, write into the code, after July 29th, stop doing this. But they didn't. And for some reason, it's going to take them a few weeks to slowly remove it from all Windows 7. I got a faster way.
Okay.
My friend Steve Gibson wrote a program for people who didn't want to be bugged about this. You qualify.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Never 10. And it will take that. It should take that thing away. So you're going to go to grc.com to get it. You'll see it in other places, but get it from Steve directly, grc.com.
Okay.
If you Google Never 10, you'll see a number of links, but take the one that's grc.com. It's free. You download it. You run it. It's very quick. It doesn't do anything else. In fact, you can then delete the program because all it's doing is removing the registry entry that says bug this poor, poor person about Windows 10, even though she already has it.
Okay. And that is with the Windows 7.
Do it in Windows 7, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I really appreciate that because I was told I had to remove the Windows 10. And I said, what?
No, I don't. I don't think so. Try this. I think this is, it's hard for me to tell from long distance, but what you're describing sounds like the invitation to upgrade. And you can get rid of that with Never 10.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
You have a great day
you
and be
too.
Safe.
You too. Bye. Yeah, nowadays that's a good thing to say to everybody. Be safe. Especially since I've been driving my Tesla on autopilot. Scares the heck out of my insurance company, I might add. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More coming up. Scott Wilkinson has the day off. He's going to a reunion. So we're going to give him some time off to celebrate with his buddies. But that means more calls, which is good. We're going to Brian in Long Beach, California. Hi, Brian. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Real good. I'm having... Oh, I've been listening to you since ZDTV. You remember that?
Yeah, I do, dimly.
Yes.
You know, I was watching MSNBC the other day. They said 20th anniversary. I thought, that can't be. But it was 20 years ago, right about now, that we launched the site on MSNBC that was the inspiration for ZDTV, which followed a couple of years later. So,
yeah, that's the first time I saw you.
Yeah,
it was great.
It's going to have its 20th anniversary in 2018. Time goes fast.
Yes, I know. My hair is turning white.
Faster than a Tesla in ludicrous mode. Yeah, my hair's turned white. What can I do for you?
Okay, I'm having scheduling problems with Microsoft Outlook. My calendar's on three devices, my laptop, my iPad, and my iPhone. And when I make an appointment on my laptop, it goes to my iPhone and my iPad. But if I make it on my iPad or iPhone, it doesn't sync up with my laptop.
Right.
And I've gotten in trouble with this. I've double booked myself. I miss, events, and so it's really screwing me up.
Yeah, so it's an Outlook syncing issue. And
yes.
What is your Outlook? What calendar is your Outlook supposed to be syncing with?
Well, I use my main calendar. I know that we could use different calendars, but I only use one calendar on that.
Yeah, that's fine. But I just mean, so do you have iOS set to sync up with your Outlook?
Yes.
Okay. I would suggest. And what was the other device?
iPad and iPhone.
So it's all iOS issue.
Yes. My laptop is PC.
And it's not syncing either.
Well, it syncs to the other devices, but if I make an appointment on my iPhone.
Oh, I see. It's one way, you're saying. It's not syncing back up.
Correct.
Yeah.
I've tried to get help from other people, and they're just...
Well, the first thing I would do, and I bet you've done this, is disconnect and reconnect. So go into the iOS settings on the iPad and the iPhone and remove the Outlook sync setting, right? What you do is you go to accounts and you add an Exchange account or an Outlook account, right? And
yes.
So you just go back into accounts and delete it. It's not going to delete.
Okay.
It might delete on the iPhone. Do you have anything on the iPhone you can't afford to lose?
Yes, I don't want to do that on the iPhone.
Oh, okay. Because it hasn't synced up.
Yeah, once again, if I do it on the laptop, it does sync to my iPad and iPhone.
Yeah.
But if I make an appointment on my iPhone, it doesn't go to the other devices. Same thing with the iPad.
Well, and you're using the iPads and iPhone's built-in calendar to do this.
Yes.
So one thing you can do is download Microsoft Outlook for iPhone and iPad.
Okay.
And that will, of course, work. and so at that point, you will have, I think, everything synchronized up. Once you get everything that's on the iOS and the iPad connected, at that point, I would probably remove, go into the accounts on your calendar and remove and reinstall the Outlook account. There's
okay.
There's two ways to do it. There's Exchange and Outlook.com. And Outlook.com is probably not the one you want. You have a Microsoft account, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Actually, maybe it is what you want. I'm looking at it right now. Because you'll log in. If you go to Outlook.com, unless you have an Exchange server at work, do you have a work server for this?
Yes. That's what I'm with my two. And I've talked to the IT people
and
there.
And they don't know.
And they're great at everything else, but unfortunately, they're scratching their head. And some coworkers are having the same problem.
Okay. One for sure fix is just to get Outlook.
Okay.
Use Microsoft's own product instead of Apple's product, and that'll solve the problem. But I would like to get this working, and it does work for some people. But I think because you're using an Exchange server, that makes it a little more tricky. So. I would say remove the Exchange server. Once you get everything copied over, you don't want to lose any data on your iPad.
Right.
That's on your iPad. You don't want to lose it from your laptop. So first thing, install Outlook, get it all synced up so all your calendars match and everything. Then check your laptop, make sure you get all the appointments and everything you want on your laptop. Then go into the iPhone and iOS, remove the Exchange connection and reestablish it. It may be that you do have to go to your IT guys. Because they may have configured Exchange in a way that is keeping it from syncing with your iPad. If other coworkers are suffering the same thing, then that's possible. However, if you're content, and by the way, Microsoft Outlook on the iPad and iPhone is excellent. If that solves your problem, then I would just not worry about it. Not use the Apple calendar and on the iPhone and the iPad.
Okay. Because I'm losing business, at work.
Yeah, no, you can't.
On my personal, I've missed tours and it's really screwing me up.
So the problem, you know, probably does come back down, though, to you, those IT guys who have, you know, Exchange is, I have every bit of sympathy for them. It's very tricky. And it may be they've got something odd working on the Exchange side.
Okay.
So I'm not, you know, I would, it may mean just removing it and reinstalling it fixes it. It may mean they have to do something on their end to configure it.
Okay. I rely on my calendar a lot. I book a lot of tours and,
yeah, this does work.
Customers.
It does work, but the oddity is the question mark is the Exchange server and how it's configured.
Okay. I only use Outlook, so you say go to the Outlook site.
No. You're not using the Outlook. There's an Outlook app for iOS and Android and iPhone. Are you using it?
Yeah, it's, well.
Is that the one that's not syncing?
Yes.
Oh.
The Exchange in my mail settings.
So you're not. Exchange. So you're not using the Apple calendar on iPhone and iPad. You're using the Outlook calendar on iPhone and iPad.
Correct. I'm sorry. I didn't mean.
No. That's fine. We're narrowing it down here. Let me ask the chat room because I don't have this. I don't have an Exchange server. Okay. Does the Outlook app? I would imagine it does. Does the Outlook app on iOS work with Exchange? I would expect it to. I mean, that's Microsoft's products all across the board.
The crazy thing is it's been working for the last 2 or 3 years. In this past 6 weeks, it just stopped working. So, you know, it just happened, and a couple of my coworkers saying it happened to them.
Did it just happen to them as well?
Yes, and we called the IT department. They're great guys. They're wonderful, but they're not, you know, they don't know what it is. So... I don't like using two separate calendars. So someone told me, well, just do everything on the.
No, in fact, that's one thing that will help is having one calendar as opposed to multiple calendars.
Well, yeah, I do have one calendar, but once again, if I book the appointment on my
use the laptop, default, you're using the default Exchange calendar. Yes.
Yes.
Boy, I'm going to have to look into this. Keep listening, okay? Somebody's gonna help us. Robert Bigelow says it's working. I think it's a configuration change that the IT guys made unwittingly. I'm not blaming them because running an Exchange server is a bag of hurt. But I think it's, especially since it's happening to coworkers, it's something they did, and they need to fix it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. Got some good suggestions in the chat room. And we'll put those up on the website at techguylabs.com. One obvious one, your Exchange server may be set up to change passwords regularly, you know, every 3 months, 6 months, year, whatever. That's something the IT guys might have set up. And if that's the case, log into your Exchange email on the web, see if your password needs to be changed, change it, then change it on your iOS device. That was a clever one. Could be all of that. 8888-ASK-LEO. If you've got some ideas, you can either call us, you can join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv, or you can go to the website, techguylabs.com. That's free. There's no sign up. It's just a regular website, but you can see every show there day by day, every hour within every show, and every call within every hour. So you can go right to that, which was, what, the third call of the first hour of today, episode 1309. You go there, and you can put your comments and suggestions for our caller. We'll fix it. It's got to come back to the Exchange server and the IT department. Jim in Malibu, looking out at the beautiful ocean, enjoying a summer day.
Leo.
Hey, Jim.
Actually, it's cold and raining here.
Oh, even better. I'm on my way.
No, California.
Isn't it funny? Isn't it funny? You know, you suffer all winter with rain, and you go, oh, I can't wait for a sunny day. And then after about 60 days of sun, you go, I look forward to some rain.
Yeah. Yeah, well, in this part of California, we look forward to rain for the last
10 years.
You know, 5 years.
Yeah, it feels like it. Yeah, I know. There's a terrible fire going on right now in the Big Sur area, 13,000 acres. Many homes gone. A friend of mine is down there fighting it. He works for the fire department here in our town, Petaluma, but everybody's being lent down.
Had one here, too, Santa Clarita, huge fire.
So. Yep, I remember that one, yeah. What can I do for you?
Well, I got a question. I'm doing some IT and consulting. I am a beginner, basically, at this. Internet websites are not my expertise, but I have a company asking me. They apparently have got hacked with malware on their website.
Ay, ay, ay.
And what they're being told is that, you know, their hosting service has them using another service to monitor. The monitoring service is telling them they've been hacked with malware and they need to, they can get rid of it, but it's an upcharge for another service.
Isn't that nice?
This is legitimate.
It is legit, unfortunately. So
okay.
We run services like that as well. These are services that scan regularly, scan your site. Here's what happens, and it's very common. It's happened to me. When you're running a web server, you're basically running a computer out there in the Wild West running software. And that software can have flaws in it, just like any other program on your computer. There are many, you know, depends what programs he's running. You have to keep it up to date all the time. The service generally does not do that, by the way. All they do is check to see if you've got malware. I don't know if he has a managed server. You're managing it for him.
No, this is just they have a host. It's a known host, and they're using a third party monitoring service, which I'm assuming.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the. So let's say they're using WordPress, whatever they're using. They're using WordPress. It is incumbent on somebody to regularly check that WordPress installation for security flaws and update it.
Right.
That's not what your service is doing, probably. That's something else. That's a managed provider. So,
right. Well, they're using can I just name it?
Yeah, you can name names.
They're using SiteLock.
Okay.
For monitoring.
But SiteLock is a monitoring, probably not. Let me look real quick. They're not a patching. So this is the problem. There's all these different services, and when you're running a web server, you're out there in the wide world. You got to know about all this stuff. And you gotta and so generally speaking, what I recommend if you're going to run a website is you get not just a bare bones server, which a lot of people do. I did for a long time, but you get somebody a managed service provider.
That's my question, because to me it should be kind of all inclusive.
Well, it isn't normally. You have to pay for it.
Right. You have to pay for it.
And it's not cheap.
Make sure it was legitimate.
It's not cheap. Yeah, so I'm not talking about removing. I'm not talking about removing the malware. I'm talking about patching your server so you don't get malware. That's another service entirely.
Okay.
So when you go to a hosting company, and they're running a web server for you, you say, who is responsible for keeping the server up to date, for patching security flaws?
Right there, right?
And if they say we are, you're paying for it. If it's $5 a month or $10 a month,
they're not doing it.
Now there are exceptions.
I have a feeling. Yeah, that's probably what's happening. And I have to, this is brand new to me. I just started doing work for them. They're probably running a basic server, host.
Yeah, they save money. So let me explain this, the layers here that you need to go through so you can understand this conceptually and help these people. By the way, one of our sponsors, Squarespace, for like $8 a month, does patch all the security flaws, but that's because you're using their software. Very often you'll go to a hosting company and they give you a server for $5. And there might be a push button install on that server that says put WordPress on here or whatever. Drupal or Joomla or whatever content management system, you press the button, then you think, I'm good, I'm golden. No, you have, at that point, you're responsible for keeping it patched. If you want somebody to continually monitor your server and make sure it's up to date, this is different than SiteLock. Make sure it's up. This is more important because this is proactive. So if you think about it at like your home computer, when you run Windows, you're responsible for making sure Windows Update runs and those patches are applied, right? It'll periodic every second Tuesday a month, they'll say, I'm applying patches. That's step one. Step two is if you get infected, and that's what SiteLock is like, an antivirus that says, oh, you're infected. Now, on PCs, antiviruses often have removal utilities. It's much more complicated on a server. So generally speaking, the antivirus company there's a third part that says removal, because they have to really go through, and it's expensive because they have to go through all your code. They have to make sure everything's patched and that nothing remains of the virus. And unlike your computer, you have a higher responsibility because you're inviting people onto that website. The reason people go after websites is it's a great way to spread stuff. If I can compromise one popular website, that website will infect everybody who visits it. Bingo, cha-ching, payoff. So bad guys very often will scan the internet, not for your home computer. That's onesie-twosie. That's retail. We're going to do this wholesale. We're going to scan for websites and look for flaws. And since people don't really update their websites as carefully as they do their home computer, it's easy. In our case, we had a content management system somebody had designed for us. We had a sysadmin, but the content management system also had some plugins, one of which was out of date and had a flaw in it. And our sysadmin didn't catch it. And so somebody drive-by, bad guy, found that flaw, used it to put malware on our system. And we didn't have SiteLock. The reason we found out is because, and by the way, this is a maybe even better than SiteLock, is Google flagged us and told our visitors, hey, the site has malware. You can't go there. Google caught it. Well, we saw that. We went, whoa. And then we found the malware and removed it. We did this ourselves because we pay for a sysadmin who works for us. But it wasn't the ideal solution. So a lot of companies, you need all three. You need somebody who's monitoring and managing and keeping your system secure. A web hosting company will offer you that, a managed service provider. But at a great expense, you're actually hiring a sysadmin to check your site regularly. You may want an antivirus like SiteLock or somebody to scan it periodically. I think we do that, and I think that's a good idea. You can't rely just on Google. And then if you find something, then you pay for a considerable amount, by the way, because this is a highly skilled process, somebody to go in there and clean it. It's not like your Windows machine where you just can nuke it and say, I'll reinstall Windows. If there's all sorts of additional issues. Generally, it's not running Windows, for instance. It's running a Unix-based operating system. It needs somebody with some expertise. So that's what's going on. And it is now probably the most common way. There's two ways malware gets spread these days. It's because Windows has been patched so carefully. It's not the number one way anymore. Either you get sent a phishing scam, gets you to run something in email, then you run it and you get a ransomware on your system or something like that. Or you get a drive-by where you go to a website that's been infected. And as a webmaster, you have a high responsibility to protect your customers and keep your site clean. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I can't remember who we use. And it's not SiteLock. Was it Qualys? I think it was Qualys. But we actually we were paying for it, but I think our sysadmin, yeah, was Qualys. The same idea. But it turned out our sysadmin had to run the scans and hadn't for years. So you see the same thing, though. This doesn't remove. This is a detection service. It's not cheap, but this is a good one. This is the one I would probably use. It's Qualys, Q-U-A-L-Y-S. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, virtual reality, augmented reality, Pokemon Go, anything on your mind, 8888-ASK-LEO. The litany. You know what? If it's a chip, if it's a digital, then we talk about it. Because really, this show is, at Sino, sometimes it's really about the nitty gritty. How do I get this working with that? We do a lot of why does this not work? How do I get this working with that? But really, the fundamental point of the show is to kind of understand what's happening, because it's moving so fast, what it means, how we can use it. And I'm on the side. I want you to know, I want to be very clear. I am on the side of the user, not of the companies that make this stuff. I often admire and honor these companies, but just as often yell at them and excoriate them for doing a poor job supporting users. It's really about us, the users, and how we can use technology better to make our lives, to make the world, to make where we work and worship and play better with technology. And technology, you know, is neutral. Technology doesn't have, is not good or bad. Even stuff we kind of think of as maybe bad, like nuclear bombs, there's a good use and a negative use. I mean, it's neutral. It's really we who add the slant, whether, you know, the dark side or the light side. And so it's really important, I think, for us to understand it. Understand the ramifications, how it could be good. I'll give you a great example. Artificial intelligence. Get ready. Sometimes they call it machine learning. Machine learning is a part of overall artificial intelligence. The idea that a machine, given enough data, could start to make the kinds of judgments we think are unique to the human mind. Distinguishing faces, recognizing faces, recognizing things. Of course, machine learning is a big part of artificial intelligence. If a car is going to drive itself, step one is to collect a lot of data. That's the step we're in right now, by the way. Step one, collect a lot of data about how things look, how the road works, as much as you can. Pour it into a machine. Sometimes humans teach it. More often than not, the machine learns. The human says, this is the outcome we want. We want you to get this car from point A to point B without hurting anybody inside or anybody outside, without damaging the car. Follow, these are the traffic laws. Here's more data. This is the law you have to follow, speed limits, what those funny yellow lines mean. And then the computer, after gathering a lot of data, a lot of trial and error, gets smarter and smarter about what's the best way to do this. That's machine learning, and it's only a part, because artificial intelligence means, in a way, more than that, right? It means absorbing a lot of data, chewing it, digesting it, and then applying what looks to us like human reasoning to it. It's not human, though, is it? No. But it is coming. It's on its way, and you see it everywhere now. Machine learning is it's the new electricity. It's one way to think of it. When we went through electrification at the turn of the last century, things changed, didn't they? As we learned to harness electricity, how to generate it, how to transport it over long distances, we replaced gas lights with electric lights. We took manual labor appliances like the water pump and the washing machine. We applied electricity to it to make them more automatic. Well, we're in the same exact situation now. We're at the turn of the last century, but instead of electricity, it's machine learning and artificial intelligence. We're starting to apply this kind of new layer to our existing technologies, our existing tools, our existing lives. And there's always problems. It's not easy. It's a big transition. One of the biggest problems we're going to face is job loss. Because machines can do our jobs, sometimes better. 1.5% of the U.S. workforce is employed as drivers, whether it's truck drivers, cab drivers, bus drivers. That's a lot of people. 1.5% of the whole workforce drives. If we do get to the point where cars can drive themselves, vehicles can drive themselves, Elon Musk announced his new part two, or he called it part deux, for reasons I don't understand. It's French, means part two. Part two of his master plan is to create trucks and buses that are electric and to bring autonomous self-driving into all of this. And it's very, you know, whether it's Tesla that does it or Uber that does it, or Didi in China that does it, or all three, or all of the above, plus many, many more. It is happening. It is happening. But there will be a lot of issues. What do these people do that are driving now? It's a great entry-level position. My son is a senior in college, drove for Lyft over the summer. That's a great entry-level job. Will those jobs go away? Probably. There's also the issue of what happens on the road. You know, I just got a Tesla, and I was very surprised. My insurance company, when they found out I was going to get a Tesla, I wasn't talking to the underwriters, and I want to hear what they say. I was talking to an agent, and the agent said, "Oh, well, okay, we're gonna make you you're gonna have a high deductible, and oh, are you using autopilot?" Yeah. Uh-oh. Because of all these stories, right? I think autopilot makes you a better driver if it's used properly. I think I have to say Tesla made a big mistake naming it autopilot. It's not autopilot. It's a very advanced cruise control. If you called it that, people would use it appropriately. I have in my previous car adaptive cruise control, which you turn on, and unlike regular cruise control, which you set a speed and it just maintains that speed until you hit the brake or hit the accelerator until you turn it off, adaptive cruise control watches the cars in front. This is the big; these are very baby steps in autopilot, autonomous driving. Watches the car in front and maintains a safe stopping distance. So if the car slows down in front, your car slows down. If it stops, your car stops. And it stops, you could set the distance. The same thing with the Tesla. This is, they call it autopilot. I'm not sure they should. It monitors the cars, not just in front now. It's got radar and cameras to monitor on the either side, too. So it monitors left lane and right lane. It's a little smarter. Car in front slows down, you slow down. Car in front speeds up, you speed up. You have a little knob. How far should it be? 1 second, 2 seconds, up to 7 seconds. The other thing it does is it monitors the lanes. So it can see the lanes, as long as they're painted or they have dots on them or some sort of marking, it can see them. And you can watch on your screen. You can see in front of on the dash in front of you, you can see exactly what the car's seeing, what cars it sees. If it's a truck, it sees a truck and you see a truck. If it's a motorcycle, it's a little motorcycle on your screen. So you kind of can verify, yes, it's seeing all the traffic around me, and yes, it's seeing the lanes. It will also steer. This is one step beyond adaptive cruise control. It will turn. If the lane curves, it will curve. So you could turn it on, and it will drive down the highway. One more step, one more thing it has. I don't think this makes it autonomous. I don't even think it makes it autopilot. It just, to me, this is fancy cruise control. Up to this point, the next thing is if you hit the turn signal, the car looks to see if the lane is clear and then will make a lane change. That makes me really nervous, by the way. That's where I'm, my hand's on the wheel, my foot's on the brake. I'm paying attention. But you see videos of morons, idiots on YouTube playing Pokemon Go, sleeping. Crazy. That's because they called it autopilot. It's not. It's fancy cruise control. And if you think of it that way, and if the insurance companies thought of it that way, they'd say, well, this is good because the car, for instance, will brake if it sees a car coming in your lane and you're coming on too fast. It will brake for you. It won't go into the next lane if there's a car there. That's safety. That's good stuff. As long as people don't get in the back seat and play checkers. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Chris, Woodland Hills. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Leo.
How are you?
Thanks for taking my call, longtime listener. Great, thanks.
What can I do for you?
I have a question about home security. I currently have the Blue Sign Company, and I'm looking for. I have a camera issue. They're obsoleting the cameras that they have, and their upgrade is really expensive. So I don't know if I should upgrade, look for another camera that operates on the same wireless Z-Wave, or just go with a complete different system. What would you recommend?
Well, cameras are going to be expensive. It's a shame they're obsoleting their cameras and you have to buy new ones. That's kind of annoying.
Yeah, they're not giving you an exchange or anything. They just say buy them or you'll
buy
be out on
buy,
the camera
buy.
Service. Yeah.
Ugh. You certainly can do it yourself. I mean, you know, ADT has given you, monitoring and et cetera. The cameras, do they monitor the camera streams?
They do. They save them for 30 days. I think they limit you to a terabyte, but they can't see them, but they do keep track of the data.
So they don't monitor them. They can't see them.
Right. They can't see
it's
them.
It's really for you. It's for your benefit.
Right.
Yeah, I would say, if you like ADT, I would decouple the camera and do it yourself. There's lots of ways to do this, and I'm sure it'll be cheaper, especially, you pay for ADT because of the monitoring. That's the big thing, right?
Right.
And you want them to keep doing that, then, continue using ADT, but just don't pay for their camera service and do it yourself. There's lots of ways to do that. You should look at Nest Cam. These are Wi-Fi cameras you could put around. They have their own cloud-based storage, similar to what you're getting, I would imagine. I bet the pricing is a lot less. The cameras aren't cheap, but without the ADT markup, I bet they're cheaper than what ADT's charging you.
Are they battery-operated cameras or powered cameras?
They're powered. You can get battery-operated. The problem with battery-operated is they're not on all the time, obviously. They're only on when they detect motion.
Right.
So that's, you have to decide. Some people like the idea of being able to open their browser, go to a website. I can do that right now with our new studio, for instance. We've got a Nest Cam there, and I can go online to our Nest account and see what's going on. That's because they're powered. Yeah. If it were battery powered, then it would either have to wait for motion. I guess some of them can turn on, but you don't want to use it too often because you don't want to have to replace the battery too often.
Right, right. No, the power is fine. It's just running wires. I wanted to keep everything wireless.
I don't blame you. Now, one of our sponsors, the Ring Video Doorbell folks, has a wireless camera that's powered by a little solar panel. And
even better.
And so it's Wi-Fi. There's no wires. They call it the stick-up cam, which is kind of not a good name because it implies somebody's getting stuck up. But it's because you stick it up. There's no installation. You just stick it up there. You stick up the little solar panel. If it's outdoors, this wouldn't work indoors. But if it's outdoors, and then you don't need batteries, you don't need power, and it uses your Wi-Fi. They also offer a monitoring. You pay. I can't remember what it was. It's not much, and they'll record all the time for you. So that's another. That's a choice. That one is kind of cool. And again, they're a sponsor. I have to say that. But that one's kind of cool because it has a speaker and microphone on it. So you can go, hey, get away from those bushes. I see you.
Yeah.
So this is a huge category, and there are lots of choices. The thing to be aware of is the cheap Chinese security cameras that are Wi-Fi often don't have good security themselves. And if you're putting them somewhere where you don't want somebody, a random person on the internet, to look at your camera, then it would behoove you to buy one of the higher end. Nest has good security. Ring has good security. Get one of the higher end systems. You want one that can patch itself if they find a security. Ring, for instance, did find a security flaw with the doorbell. Somebody could remove your doorbell and figure out what your Wi-Fi access codes were from it. And when Ring found that out, they pushed a patch, and they were able to fix that before anybody got bit. That's what you're looking for, because no software is perfect. We've heard of camera companies like Foscam. There are search engines on the internet where you could say, I want a Foscam. I want to see somebody's living room, and you can find them because they're on the internet without any good security. So,
it's hard to find a good wireless camera that offers a high resolution also.
Nest is great, but the thing to think about with that is it's using internet bandwidth. Or the Nest cameras, which are high def, use a megabit a second. So you have to have bandwidth to spare because they could kill your internet.
Right.
So all of these things you got to kind of be aware of,
All right. Well, I will definitely look into the Nest system.
I really like the Nest. What I would do is price it out. You do have to wire it. They may have wireless. Another company I really like is Axis, AXIS. They have wired and wireless.
Okay.
And price it out. And I bet you keep the, you have ADT, you got all the sensors, you've got their monitoring. You're probably under contract. Might as well keep that and just say, I don't want the, you're going to gouge me on replacing the cameras. Thanks, but no thanks. They're not monitoring the cameras, so what's the point? It's just that's the same as your own camera system.
Right. That's where I'm at, is at that point where I can either not buy the upgrade cameras and go with something different.
That's what I would do.
That's what I would do.
Because they're going to mark it up. That's their business. They're going to mark it up. Then they have, you know, they install it. They send out and install. They make money on it. So it's going to be, no matter what, do-it-yourself is probably going to be cheaper than anything ADT can do. And the nice thing is you get to choose the camera system. You get to choose the capabilities you want. And nobody's going to call you and say, oh, we're obsoleting those. You have to remove them and replace them with a more expensive system. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's not a fun call.
That's kind of annoying.
Yeah.
You know? So, this is an opportunity to say, yeah, thanks, but no thanks.
All right, perfect.
Thanks for
Thank
the call.
You very much.
I appreciate it. The downside is you got to do all the research. You got to install it. You got to figure it out. But you're smart. You could do that. Anybody who listens to this show has the capabilities. This is kind of how the tech world is. If you don't care and you don't want to spend the time to understand and learn it, there's somebody who'll do it for you, but you'll pay for it, and then you're beholden to them. And it's not at all uncommon for them to come back to you and say, hey, by the way, we're going to charge you another $1,500 a month. You don't mind that, do you? Because you are in their pocket. You don't have a choice. So one of the reasons this show exists is to empower you so you can do it yourself. And a lot of it just involves me saying, no, you could do this. It's not that complicated. I think we have kind of this phobia. It's all new, right? All this new technology. But hey, the zipper was new technology to people who only used buttons. They figured it out. You could figure it out. A 5-year-old could figure it out. You could figure it out. You're smart. It just takes a little energy and a little time. And if your time is more valuable than your money, pay for it. But try to find a service provider who's not going to gouge you after the fact. 8888-ASK-LEO. We'll put some links to the stuff I mentioned in the show notes. We always do. TechGuyLabs.com. You know what? No charge. No charge. No sign up. Nothing. I don't want your email address. Your privacy is as important to me as it is to you. Just go to the website, TechGuyLabs.com. Leo Laporte. The Tech Guy, 8888, Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Let's see here. Joe in Corona is next. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I've been better, but I've been worse, so I guess I'm all right.
I'm feeling pretty good myself.
Good.
And fine fettle.
I want to say that your show today is just outstanding.
Thank you.
You have touched on so many subjects that are dear to my heart. Electric vehicles, raised floors,
You must be an engineer.
Well, yeah, I retired from Boeing. So
somehow I knew that. Awesome. Nice to meet you.
I used to build satellite junk.
How fun.
We called it that because we'd shoot it into orbit and it would become junk.
That's another great subject. I love talking about space as well. We live in amazing times.
We do.
It's so easy to take it for granted.
I can likely say that I have items in orbit that have my initials in them somewhere.
How fun is that?
I think it's fun.
That's awesome.
Anyway, I heard something about virus protection on Windows 10 being adequate the way it's set up rather than having an external McAfee.
Yes.
Something like
so
that.
What I really don't like, we get a lot of calls from people who either get free trials of McAfee or Norton, or they decide, oh, I've heard over and over again, I have to have an antivirus, and they put them on. And what I really don't like about a lot of the security software is it actually adds a security flaw. For instance, Symantec, Norton's antivirus, we learned, actually made systems less secure, had a severe flaw in it. At best, it will slow you down, block stuff you don't need. And fortunately, Microsoft, I think they took their time on this. They didn't want to put these antivirus companies out of business. But they knew, ultimately, it's their responsibility to protect their users. So it slowly worked its way up to this point. At first, they offered a free antivirus called Security Essentials. Then they kind of bundled anti-spyware into Windows 8 called Defender. Now, at this point in Windows 10, it comes with an antivirus. It comes with anti-spyware. And the other thing that's which is fine, it's lightweight, doesn't bog you down, doesn't get in your way. It's from Microsoft, and it's free. It's there. You already have it. You don't even have to do anything about it. The other advantage, the other thing that's changed is viruses don't work the same way they used to. Because Microsoft has done a good job patching Windows, protecting you, viruses no longer work. You know, remember they used to, you'd get one on a floppy disk or you'd inadvertently download one and it would take over your machine. They don't do that anymore. They change them fast. Antivirus companies can't keep up with the signatures. Really, what you protect yourself now, no antivirus can do what you can do to protect yourself. So I tell people, you don't need an antivirus, but you do need to make sure you update regularly. And not just Windows, but anything that goes on the internet, Flash, your browser, all of that stuff. And most of these companies now are updating automatically, regularly to prevent these problems.
Now, this virus protection that's built in, is it good for any of the browsers, Edge?
Yeah, it protects you universally. But again, nothing protects you. Nothing protects you against your own mistakes.
Oh, yeah. Don't click the wrong thing.
So, because if it did, and this is why antivirus problems also pose problems, is if it stops you from doing stuff you want to do because it thinks you're doing something dangerous, that's annoying.
Yeah, very.
And a lot of times they do.
I've used Kaspersky for years, and they upgraded from pure to total security.
That's where they usually go wrong. Kaspersky, in its simplest form, just scans your disks, and that's pretty harmless.
Yeah, and I liked it before that, but when they went to the new stuff, they kind of made it bigger.
Yeah, everybody does this. That's what happened to Norton. That's what happened to McAfee. Don't get those big security suites. Those are dangerous.
Yeah, bloatware.
Bloatware. So you're fine. You just have to make sure you understand the critical rules of protecting yourself online. And number one is update.
Right.
You got to keep everything up to date because software has flaws in it and you got to keep it up to date. Microsoft's done such a good job now. Number two, by the way, do not, and I've said this for years, open email attachments. Do not. There's recently, Microsoft just patched, Apple just patched a flaw where a malformed image, a TIFF or a bitmap image, sent to a Macintosh machine or iOS could give a bad guy complete access and control of your system.
That's insane.
And people would say, oh, well, it's just an image. What harm could it do? But it wasn't the image that was causing the problem. It was in the image when it got played back by the media subsystem on the computer that had a flaw in it. The malware in the image would trigger this flaw. And so this always happens because of attachments. Don't open attachments. And people say, well, if it's from somebody I know, is it safe? No, that's worse because the bad guy's going to pretend to be somebody you know.
I had that happen.
So don't only open attachments if you expect them, if you asked for it. It's, you know, be very careful with attachments. That's, by the way, the number one way businesses now get bit by ransomware is
right.
By an email attachment. How Sony got bit. I guarantee you, once they dig into the Democratic National Committee hack, it will have been an email. It will have been an email attachment.
Yep, no doubt.
So you know this. You're an engineer. You know.
Well, I'm slowly going out of date. My real expertise in computers was in DOS.
Ah, well, you know, there's a lot to be said for simplicity.
Oh, God, yes. I love it.
They just recently released the source code for the Apollo 11 lunar module landing computer. I don't know if you saw this. It was assembly. And, of course, as you know, as a satellite designer, the software and chips that have to go into space have a whole – first of all, the chips have to be simpler. They have to be protected against cosmic rays.
Sure. And upset.
And the software can't have a bug.
Because yep. if you can't send somebody out to fix it, I volunteer.
That's right. I'll go up. I can fix it.
It's a one-way trip, you know?
Yeah. So simple is celebrated, and it ought to be celebrated in space. We're still sending spacecraft up with fairly old chips in
them. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because
we were launching some stuff maybe 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
And the maximum memory in our spacecraft control units was, you know, under a meg.
Right. not a liability necessarily, because you tightly coding, you the chip does what you need it to do. You don't send an Intel i7 processor into space. That would be nuts.
You know, and that brings me to a whole, I mean, this is a whole point I've had for years, was the issue with bloatware. And if we had run into the quantum limit, which we sort of did when the Pentium started...
Yeah, I remember they couldn't make a 4 gigahertz Itanium. It flopped, yeah.
Exactly. If we had run into the memory limit and the processor speed limit earlier, we would be writing so much better code.
I agree.
I mean, we would have. I mean, if your maximum hard drive was still 20 megabytes, we'd be doing everything we're doing now. We'd just be doing it with much better code.
There's a lot that can be done to make our software safer. Certainly, if you're running a computer, you should be very aware of overly complex stuff. I'm kind of a fan of, and increasingly a fan of, the Unix philosophy,
which is absolutely.
Each program does one thing.
Does it very well, and then it moves on.
And you can chain programs together if you want more complex things. You can, in effect, build your own more complex engine. But just do one thing well. It's easier to debug. It's easier to verify. It's easier to maintain.
It used to be that was the philosophy in programming.
That's right.
In basic programming, right. It's if-then. Do one thing, do it, move on to the next thing.
It would almost be nice to reboot and refactor, but, of course, we're not going to be able to do
That's
not
gonna happen.
Yeah. Hey, it was great talking to you.
Great talking to you, and thank you for your help on this. It's what I needed to hear.
Thank you, Joe. Have a great day. Stay safe on the Internet. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hey, if you're the type of person that has to do the hiring in your company, I know it's sometimes like, I don't want to do this. I got to tell you, you're doing the most important job in any company. A company succeeds or fails by the quality of its employees. You know that, right? And I think in many ways, Steve Jobs used to say this, the company, the corporation, is one of the greatest inventions of humanity. Getting a bunch of people together, aligned on a purpose and a goal, and kind of the synergy of all these minds working on the same goal, incredibly powerful. That's why adding to your team, whether it's a 2-person team or a 1,000-person team, is the most important job in the company. But you got to have help. You got to have ZipRecruiter. This is what we use when we hired our most recent editor. It is just great, and it takes all the pain points out of hiring. For instance, you know, we'll stipulate the right person's there somewhere in the world. There's just exactly the right employee, but you got to reach them. So how do you know where they're looking? You know, they're out there. They're looking for a job. Are they looking on one job board in particular? Are they maybe just using Craigslist or Twitter or Facebook? Wouldn't it be nice if you could post once to ZipRecruiter and then it goes to all of them? That's what ZipRecruiter does. That's, in fact, how they became famous. They also have job hunters go to ZipRecruiter. So they have like 6 million current resumes, and they'll immediately match up your posting with those resumes. So you'll start, the applicants will start rolling in the first 24 hours. Now, here's the big pain point people often report. Well, I'm going to get a lot of calls, a lot of emails, and now you're on 100 boards. I'm going to get 100 times that. But what happens is the candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's interface, not to your inbox, not to your phone. And you can create questionnaires there that will help you screen them. You can have multiple choice. You can have essay answers. You know, answer these questions. You can screen them really quickly, rate the remaining people, and hire the right one fast in just a few days. And because they have a mobile application process, you're going to attract the mobile applicant in the same way that you attract the desktop applicant. That's fantastic. 800,000 businesses, including Twit and many of the Fortune 500, use ZipRecruiter. They've delivered 125 million candidate applications now. This is amazing. Trusted by so many companies. Look at all these companies, some of the biggest names. And go read the testimonials and you'll see it really works. Right now you can post for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/techguy. ZipRecruiter.com/techguy. It's the fastest way to hire the perfect employee. I love it. And you will too. ZipRecruiter.com/techguy to try it free right now. And thank them so much for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number if you want to talk high tech. John is in Pioneer, California. Hi, John.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm doing okay. It's a little warm up here, and I hope you and your ones are doing well.
We are. Everybody is healthy and happy, knock on wood. Just telling my wife that the other day. We really got to be grateful for our health. We have a dear friend who's one of our hosts. He hosts Floss Weekly, Randall Schwartz. Love the man. He's in the hospital right now. And I was just thinking, if you don't have your health, you got nothing. So knock on wood.
Yeah, I watched Randall on and I had the on the spin rate. It's a long time.
You're breaking up a little bit. What can I do for you?
Someone called me on my cell phone this morning with my phone number, and I didn't...
Clever, hey? Did you know it's easy to spoof any phone number you want? There's even websites online that let you do that.
Yeah. I was just wondering if it was a phishing or a scam.
Well, it's probably a sales call. But the point is, caller ID is a broken system. It's no more reliable than email return addresses.
Okay.
You ever get spam from somebody, the return address is your address? Of course.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing. You can spoof caller ID. The only reason I use caller ID is if I don't recognize a number, I don't answer it. And I actually use Google Voice, and it will reject calls. I can give it a list of numbers or just say, if it's an unknown call, reject it out of hand. I don't even want to hear it. So because there's so much spam going on now, and you know, we're getting into the election year, right? The election season. So get ready for robocalls and all that stuff. So if I don't know the number, if you're not in my contact list, I don't see the number come up on my phone.
Yeah, but one phone number and someone called me and I just, it woke up and I go, boy, this is me calling me.
Yeah, if I saw my own number on a call, I would absolutely not answer it. Yeah.
Should I call the FTC?
No, there's nothing you can do. It's a broken system. There are websites running all the time. You can do a Google search that will let you spoof any number you want.
Okay.
So it's meaningless. Right. There's nobody to call. It's just not a system that was meant to be secure and is not.
Well, I call AT&T, but they said take it down to your local AT&T store and
check it out. No, there's nothing wrong with it. That was a dumb answer. That's whoever you talked to at AT&T was reading from a notebook.
Yeah,
which is often the case. I'll tell you here, using my own amazing brain cells, that's just some spoofed number, easy to do, and it's probably a sale. You didn't answer it, I take it.
No, I didn't answer it.
No. You're right, because it's a sales call. The problem is it's hard to stop these guys. There is a federal do not call registry. You can go there, put your number in it. I would. You can, if somebody calls and solicits you, say, please have, don't be, be, be. I would be, you know, fairly polite because these are, I'm sad to say, very low paid, usually high school and college students. This is the best job they can get. It's a terrible job. And they get hung up on all the time. So I'm always very nice. I'm saying, hi, Lori, please. And all I say is, please put me on your do not call list. If they are a legitimate company running in the United States, they are required to say, of course, sorry to have bothered you. Thank you. Bye-bye. Unfortunately, there's lots of international companies and fly-by-night companies who don't. And then you just hang up on them and you maybe block them. There are some services for your cell phone now like Truecaller. And even the Google Dialer now will do this. If you have a Google phone, a Nexus phone, you're probably going to get, if you haven't gotten already, the new Google phone application that has spam blocking. If you don't have that Truecaller, if you have another phone, Truecaller, it's a Scandinavian, I think it's Sweden, a Scandinavian country. You do pay they have a free version and you're going to want to pay for it eventually. But they do crowdsource spam blocking. So if you get a call like that, you can enter that number in and say, block it. Here's the problem. It's your number. You can't. You're not going to block that. They can use any number they want. So you can do the do not call registry. You can complain. You can use Truecaller and block spam. But because it's easy to use any number they want as the caller ID. And if they don't care, if they're out of the country, they don't have to follow federal law, whatever. You can't block them because they're going to use a different number every time. It's sad. There is a site, nomorobo.com. I'm not crazy about sites like this because usually you have to forward your number through them. And I don't want to do that. So I don't answer calls if I don't know who it is. I just don't answer it. And I use Google Voice to block a lot of numbers. I use Truecaller to block a lot of numbers. But just still numbers get through. The system's broken. And because, you know, you're on a cell phone, every call costs you money, you should be able to block it. 8888-ASK-LEO. If you call us, use your real number. No, we don't pay any attention to that. Joe is in Thomasville, Georgia. Hello, Joe.
Hey, Leo, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Just a real quick story about what you were just talking about. I had a gentleman friend of mine that passed away about 2 years ago. And this year on Halloween, I got a call from his number and his name. Now, that's a little freaky. You know?
I wonder how they got the name. I guess if you're listed, they could do that.
I would guess.
I'm unlisted, and I get far fewer calls. I pay the phone company. It's really absurd that you have to pay the phone company for an unlisted landline.
Yes, it is.
But you do. But I do it, and I get far fewer calls than if I were listed. Nevertheless, a lot. So that's got to be the only way they get the number and the name.
Well, another thing that I do that's really it really throws a lot of people off is I put a 10-second dead air answer on
Perfect.
My answering machine.
Perfect.
And
Perfect.
The answering machine will come on and stay on for about 10 seconds, and at the end of it I'll say, if you're a friend or family, when you hear the beep, start talking.
Perfect.
I don't recognize your voice, I'm not picking up.
Because the robocalls will hang up after that.
Right, right.
So that's a good – and then you tell friends and family, you know, you're going to get this dead air,
yeah,
so hang in there.
Dead air, so hang in there until you hear
Brilliant.
Me say something.
Thanks for sharing that. That's a great technique.
Sure. I've got this Galaxy S2 watch, second generation, and it's a nice watch, and it's got a screen reader on it. So I thought, wow, man, this is really cool. But the only problem that we found was when you put the screen reader on it, it will disable a lot of the functions on the it'll.
What's the screen? What is this? What do you mean by screen reader?
It tells you what's on the screen.
It says it out loud?
Yeah.
Oh, that's neat.
For example.
Screen on.
Oh, so that's for blind people, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And that's a talking clock that's been around, a category that's been around. But, yeah, can't do it for everything, so they just disable the things it won't talk about.
Well, say, for example, if you want to use voice memo and you
That's frustrating.
Voice memo, it comes up not available.
That's frustrating.
If you hit certain other things that really aren't apps but are functions,
well,
it'll come up not available.
There's nothing you can do about it. That's Samsung, right? I mean, that's their choice. Got to run. Top of the hour. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and virtual reality headgear and electric vehicles, autonomous driving, anything on your mind, if it's got chip and if it's technology. Love talking about it. What's my phone number? Oh, I'm glad you asked. You didn't ask, did you? But I'm glad you asked. 8888-ASK-LEO. Easy to remember, right? Because it's 88 keys on a piano. I have two pianos. I'm one to my left, one to my right. And all you have to do is ask Leo, why do you have two pianos? See how easy that is to remember? 8888-ASK-LEO. Well, it's easier than this. 888, which is a toll-free number, right? 888-827-5536. Anywhere from the U.S. or Canada. But if you're listening on the internet somewhere else in the world, don't worry. You can call us, use Skype or some other voice over the internet product, and it should be toll-free for you as well. Website is techguylabs.com. That's where we put everything. You know, I want to mention links and stories and stuff. We just put it all there so you don't have to write anything down. You just remember one thing, techguylabs.com. On to the phones we go. Micheline in Studio City, California. Am I saying that right, Micheline? Hello, Micheline. Oh, I gotta push a magic button or something. Hi, Micheline.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Oh, I've talked to you before. Comment ça va, Micheline? I love your name. I love your accent. It's so beautiful.
Oh, you're so nice, Leo.
Now, tell me. Now, are you from France?
I am. I'm from Paris.
Oh, a Parisienne. There's nothing more beautiful than the women of Paris. Now, let me ask you this.
Yes.
Somebody once told me, just like we love the French accent in the U.S., French people love it when Americans speak French in their American accent. Is that true?
So true. You have no idea. It is so true. We love it. It is so cute.
It's cute.
So adorable.
Yeah. Good. You know, it's nice to know because I'll speak more French now because I won't be embarrassed.
No, don't be. They love it. We all love it. It's so adorable.
It is. It's adorable.
Yes.
Adorable.
Adorable, right?
Adorable. Well, what can I do for you today?
Well, I am a realtor, and for the first time, I'm considering a MacBook. I'm coming from a Windows 7 laptop.
Oh, do it. You'll be so much happier.
Really?
Oh, yes. So now, the only question would be if you're using MLS software or something that would only run on Windows.
No, not anymore.
Yeah.
They have now adapted.
Good.
The MacBooks have adapted, and we have now tons of realtors that have that's why I didn't do it for many, many years.
Right.
But now they say that it's so simple, and, you know, for everybody else, that's why I'm asking you, because I'm not sure it's going to be good for me. But I'm not a champion of the computer. You know, I know very well how to do my work. I don't watch movies, I don't play games on my computer, but I do Google, I do researches, and my work.
I think it'll be perfect for you. The nice thing about Macintoshes is only one company makes them, and they maintain a very high hardware standard. So they're well made. They're very reliable. They're also, because they're pricier, part of the greater expense for Apple hardware is that they provide very, very good support. And you know, you save money when you buy a Windows machine, but one of the things they take out of the equation is the support. It's bad. It's terrible. Apple support is great. If you're near an Apple store, you can bring it to the Genius Bar. They are excellent. They will, you know, they stand by their stuff. So I think you'll love it. And the truth is, the difference between any computer, Windows or Mac, is minor differences, like where the button to expand a window is.
Right.
Where instead of control panel, it's called system preferences. Instead of the start button being on the bottom, the menu bar's on the top. It's little things like that you'll get used to. In a day or two, you'll be completely comfortable.
And also, I've had iPhones for years, so I think that may help.
Yeah.
So my quandary now is this. I am looking at the 15.4 MacBook Pro.
That's pretty big. Do you need something that big?
I love a big screen.
I love when you say that. So if you need a big screen, that's an excellent choice. Yeah.
Okay. So then they have two choices. They have a 256 GB, I guess that's gigabyte.
That's correct.
Flash.
Yeah.
For $1,850 and 512 gigabyte flash for $2,350.
I'll tell you an easy way to tell. Look at your Windows laptop.
Yes.
And see how much space you've used on that.
Ah, okay.
I would think for most people, you said you don't watch movies. You don't. 256 gigs is plenty.
Plenty.
Do get an SSD that makes, and I don't think they even sell them without SSDs anymore. That makes such a difference in speed, you'll be blown away.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't need to be double blown away.
No, I think it's plenty. But look and see how much space you use on your PC.
Okay.
That'll give you some idea of what your requirements are. I can't imagine needing more than 256.
Really? Yeah. Okay, very good. And then somebody told me that to buy a one-year-old refurbished from Apple is just as good. Do you agree?
If you buy it from Apple.
Only if you buy it from
Apple. Yeah, don't buy it from anybody else because Apple will stand by it. But I have to tell you, you won't save. You'll save a few hundred dollars.
Okay, not worth it.
Probably not.
No.
Because you don't know what problems it had. Now, I should warn you that new releases of MacBooks is imminent. We don't know when because Apple doesn't telegraph this. But everybody agrees that they're going to update the MacBooks probably in the fall.
Oh, in the fall.
Yeah, it won't be right away. It might be September or October. And it might not happen at all because Apple doesn't, you know.
Really?
They don't call. They don't
even do that.
They don't call me and tell me. No, we're just thinking. It's been the MacBook's designs are more than a year old. There are newer chips from Intel. Apple has not yet adopted those newer chips. I suspect there will be an update, but I don't know it for sure. I just want to warn you because if you buy it now and in 2 months there's a new version, you might feel But I'm telling you, these are fast enough. There's nothing there's nothing the new one will do. Here's the one rumor that might be interesting. Mm-hmm. Instead of, they have function keys, just like your PC up at the top above the number row, they have a function key row. The rumor is Apple's going to replace those keys with a touch screen that will modify depending on what software you're using. And that would be kind of useful if the software, instead of F1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, it would have different things. Like if you're in Microsoft Word, it would have save, open, stuff like that. That would be kind of cool.
I see.
I don't want you to feel bad if you in 2 months, I don't want you to say,
I'm thrilled with the idea of having a touch screen for some reason.
Good. They're really nice. They're really, really nice laptops.
And the last question, if I may, is do you think it makes a difference to buy it from Best Buy versus buying it from Apple?
Yes, get it from Apple.
Get it from Apple.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you have to decide, and this is a tough one, whether you want Apple Care. This is the extended, you get a year.
Yes.
But it extends it. And people often say you get better treatment from Apple if you have Apple Care. So if you can afford it, and a laptop tends to get banged up more, I'd get Apple Care.
Apple Care.
That's their extended warranty.
Especially if I'm new to Apple, don't you think?
Yeah. They have very good training at the Apple Store. You're not going to have any trouble, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You're wonderful.
All right, Micheline. Au revoir. A bientôt. A tout à l'heure. Bye bye. All right. Okay, we're going to take a break now. Fanning myself. But we we'll be back with more. 8888 Ask Leo, the website techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I bet she does really well in real estate, right? Oh, let me show you. Oh, this house is beautiful for you. You will love it. Oh, it's so beautiful. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. Terry is in Diamond Bar, California. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Welcome. I have a quick question.
Sure.
I went with DSL listening to you on the radio.
Great.
Bought a Netgear router.
Okay.
And today I had I don't know why I'm not connecting to the internet. So Frontier came in thinking that it was on it's on him.
Right.
And on his side, I should say. And he told me that I needed to. The firmware needs to be updated.
Okay.
Is that true?
Could be. So you have three players here, and that's where it gets complicated. So your phone company is Frontier. They provide the copper lines that go into your house.
Yes.
DSL Extreme is an independent internet service provider. The FCC requires phone companies to let ISPs come into their call center, into their central office, and provide internet service and sell it. So you could probably get it from Frontier, but you can get it from other people like DSL Extreme as well. So they're sitting on top of Frontier's wires, so their wires have to be okay. Then they provide you access, so that box, that DSL Extreme box in your house, goes back to the central office where there's a DSL Extreme.
Because Frontier gave me the the old, I have the 1.0.0.62, and he says that I should be updated to 1.0.1.
Maybe. 10. And that's on your Netgear router?
Yes.
You bought the router, right? You have a DSL Extreme modem?
Yes.
And you bought the router?
And I bought the router.
I think he's kind of spitballing, but maybe he's right. It's easy to update your router. So what you'll do, you need a computer that's on the network. You'll go to Netgear and you'll download the firmware for that model of router, okay? So it's netgear.com.
Oh, okay.
And you just download it. It'll be a .bin file. And they have instructions right there on what to do. But essentially, you log into your router. You know, your router has a browser-based interface, right?
Right.
And there is, in the menus, there's update firmware. It's in the kind of advanced settings at the end there. And you press that button, it'll say, okay, where's the .bin file? And you'll say, oh, it's right here in my download folder. And then the router will update itself. Don't unplug it. Don't reset it. Just let it do that. It'll take about 10 minutes. And then it's done. Now, if that fixes it, well, the guy, Frontier guy, was smart. I don't know how he knows that.
Because he was on my laptop and
he's just guessing. Yeah, he's just guessing. But he might be right.
Okay.
I'm not going to second guess him because I don't know. Then you do remember you have to have all the proper settings set up. It's probably really a call to DSL Extreme you need to make.
Okay, I am going to do that.
Yeah, because they'll say call Frontier only if they think it's the phone lines. But the first thing DSL Extreme can do and will do is ping your DSL Extreme modem. They'll sit there in their office, the person you're on the phone with, and she'll say, okay, well, let me see if I can see your modem. And then she'll say, yeah, I could see it. You're online. That's the first thing. That'll verify that the Frontier lines are correct and working. And then the modem is correct and working. So then it's just a matter of setting up the router to work with your... It's silly that any human should have to do this. This is the kind of thing you have an IT department for, except...
Oh, my God. And I've been on the phone with him.
I know.
Oh.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
So
okay, then let me do
one way to do this to test it is to hook your computer directly into the DSL Extreme modem, see if that's working. And if that is...
They are working. The lights are working. Everything's working, except I am getting a 50% of the internet.
Okay. What do you mean 50% of the internet?
That's what they're telling
me. You're only getting the stuff that begins with A through L? What does that mean? Your speed isn't up to what it should be?
Right.
Got it.
Right.
Well, okay. Oh, I'm sorry that anybody has to go through this. This is crazy.
God,
you shouldn't need to do this, but who else, right? There's no IT department.
Yeah.
Guess who's the IT department?
Right.
You are, Terry. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So, it could be.
DSL back.
Do the firmware and then say, I did this. Have them ping it.
Okay.
Yeah. Good luck, Terry.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
I just wanted to, touch bases with you. That's all.
Yeah.
I listen to you every time.
Oh, you dear. Thank you. I feel bad. Nobody should have to do this, but this is kind of the way it is. You know, the internet is, I got to debug my electrical connection so I can get electricity in the house. Oh, the water's not working. Let me go out there and reboot the water router. You don't ever have to do that. It's just kind of utilities should just work. You know, you turn on the faucet, water comes out. I guess you could hire a plumber or electrician if it's not. It's usually something physical and mechanical. But the problem with this computer stuff is crazy complicated. The most complicated thing in your house is your computer, right? By far. The next most complicated thing, your router, because it's just a little computer. And why normal human beings should have to worry about this? My firmware is not 1.08397. But all I can do is offer sympathy. And you'll be spending a lot of time on the phone. Neil is in Phoenix. Hi, Neil. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Well,
thanks for calling.
Great. No problem. Maybe it's a fairly quick question here. I've had Verizon for years.
Yeah.
And I've had no particular problem with it. The reason I've had it is years ago, I had T-Mobile, and I had some issues with them. This is back in 2004. I went to Verizon. I stayed with them, and it's worked well in Phoenix, where I am now, and it worked well in L.A. and so forth. But I'm, you know, but they are rather pricey. And I hear you sing your praises of T-Mobile.
Love T-Mobile. And others.
I'm concerned about switching it over. I have a, if it matters, I have an, a 6S Plus iPhone.
Okay.
But I'm just concerned about
I have to take,
switching over.
Yeah, I have to take a break. Just a little couple of commercials. Hang in there. And when we come back, we'll talk about getting how to choose a cell phone company. That's a great question. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. We're talking about cell phones and how to pick a good cell phone provider. Neil's in Phoenix. Now, we've all seen the ads. Verizon's the one that does that ad with the bowling balls, right? And how they're the best service. But whenever they say that, you always should add nationwide. But you're not nationwide. You're in Phoenix. So what's the best service in Phoenix? That's a different question. And then, of course, there's also the question, what's the best company? You know, what's the most affordable? Who offers you the best options? You know, and so forth. You know, I'll be honest. I think my favorite company, but it's very limited, is Google Fi, Project Fi. So, Neil, in order to use a Project Fi, you'd have to buy a phone from Google, one of their Nexus phones, their Android phones. You're using an iPhone.
Right, that's a 6S Plus.
So that would be a big leap of faith. Here's why I like Fi. It uses more than one carrier. Google, and this is why you have to buy a Google phone, because they have the capability. The phone will switch between T-Mobile, Sprint, and U.S. Cellular, depending on who's got the best signal. Oh, and throw in Wi-Fi, because they also have Wi-Fi calling and Wi-Fi. It will use whatever's best, and it will hand off seamlessly. So when I'm in my house, my Nexus 6P, I'm making a phone call. I'm doing it on Wi-Fi. If I drive away, it seamlessly hands off to T-Mobile, usually T-Mobile, although occasionally Sprint, depending what's stronger. So that's nice. It has the other really good advantage if you travel overseas. And again, this is all specific to your particular needs, but if you travel overseas, Google Fi doesn't charge extra for overseas data in a great many countries.
Yeah, now I have I live in Phoenix, and of course, when I did travel, I like to go to L.A. because that's where I'm from. I go to Southern California, and I go to New Orleans. And
part of L.A. and New Orleans is every carrier charges the same in L.A. and New Orleans. But if you went to Paris, Google Fi would be a great deal because you're paying the same as if you're local, $10 a gigabyte. And so when I travel, I take a Fi phone with me, and I really like that. However, T-Mobile is excellent. They also offer, as does Sprint, good international travel plans. Verizon and AT&T do not. Verizon's the worst. But again, you don't travel internationally, not an issue, is it? It is an issue would be for you coverage, I guess. You know, how well the phones work in Phoenix and L.A. and in New Orleans, if that's where you go most of the time. Hard to figure out what the coverage is going to be. I don't trust the coverage maps at all, because those are advertising vehicles, right?
Right. Now, if I did want to go to T-Mobile, do I need to switch phones, or will this phone still work as it is? Can I just pop a new SIM in it?
That phone should work just fine. The reason being that a couple of things. First of all, on LTE phones like that iPhone 6S, Verizon is prevented from locking the SIM card slot. FCC decision prevented them from doing that. So they don't lock their SIM card slot. That means you could put anybody else's LTE in there. And on T-Mobile, voice is on LTE, so you're fine. And on the iPhone, it handles that very well. Not every phone will do what you want to do, but your phone will, absolutely. In fact, I've done it. My wife has a 6S Plus on Verizon, and when we traveled, I put a T-Mobile SIM in it for her, and that worked fine. So, yeah, you're not going to be there. You'll see the plans on T-Mobile are a little more flexible. The issue for you is totally carriage, right, is how well it works.
Right. The only thing about doing this is just to save some money, because the Verizon is not cheap at all. It's very expensive, but I've taken that
absolutely
because of getting the coverage. But maybe it's worth, you know, gotta save some money now and then. You know, trying to think, save some money nowadays. I need to see if I can, you know, cut back, and T-Mobile just seems so much more reasonable if it works.
Yeah, I love T-Mobile. So there are third-party coverage maps. OpenSignal.com is one, so that you can actually go there and trust them a little more than going to, you know, T-Mobile's coverage map. That, you know, that's T-Mobile's best guess. So I would try that. I would go to OpenSignal.com. They do the same kind of measuring. You can read reviews, too. And of course, the best way to do it is to ask coworkers and neighbors who are using their phones in the same area you are. How do you like that? How's the voice quality? Does it disconnect? Can you drive with it without losing signal? Things like that. T-Mobile's really improved their T-Mobile and Sprint, both being number four and number three, are working harder and really doing everything they can to improve their coverage and so forth. T-Mobile's great in cities. I don't think you'd ever have a problem in any metro area. Where they start to fall down is as you get in the away from the city.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your information. I appreciate
it. You're very welcome. Yeah. Yeah, you can't, you know, you cannot trust. It's not the case when you say Verizon says, we got the best coverage nationwide. That's an average nationwide. And they may not have the best coverage where you are. That's all that really matters, where you are, where you're going to use that phone. In terms of customer, look, all cell phone companies are terrible. They tend to have the worst customer service. The companies that are trying harder are the ones that are number three and four, Sprint and T-Mobile. And I've had very good customer service from T-Mobile. I've been pretty happy with their capabilities. They also have, you know, some nice features I have mixed feelings of. There's something called zero rating. T-Mobile calls it binge on. They don't count against your data when you use certain services like Spotify to listen to music. It doesn't count against your data limits. Netflix when you watch video. The reason I have mixed feelings, well, there are two reasons I have mixed feelings. One, they downgrade all video. Probably not a problem to make it less burdensome to the network. So the quality is lower than you would get if you were watching on somebody else's phone. But on a phone, it probably doesn't matter. Second, more concerning, is it's kind of against the fundamental concept of net neutrality. This is a little counterintuitive. As a customer, you go, well, this is great. What's wrong with me getting free bandwidth for Spotify? Great for Spotify, great for you. Not so great for Spotify's competitors. In effect, T-Mobile is artificially supporting some companies and not others. So by giving you free bandwidth, you're more likely to subscribe to Spotify, and that kind of reduces the possibilities for innovation for somebody better to come along, because they'd be at a disadvantage. And I don't think any company should be allowed to pick and choose winners. And in effect, that's what T-Mobile's doing. This is a tough argument to make, I know. I'm a T-Mobile customer, and it's great. I get free bandwidth for my Netflix and my Spotify, and it's a lot, by the way, of companies, hundreds of them. That's T-Mobile's argument is, no, anybody can do this. But no, it's not the case that anybody can do it. And so they tend to favor the current incumbents, the companies that are doing well right now, which is not good for the internet, because you want to encourage innovation. You want somebody to come along and do a better job than Spotify, right? That's how it works. But by choosing these winners, it's, you know, kind of choosing against these new companies. And I'm not crazy about that. On the other hand, I like Twit. I mean, T-Mobile. One reason I mentioned Twit, my podcast company, we're not zero rated. If you watch our stream, it counts against your bandwidth. So I'm one of the little innovators that's hurt by this. That's not the reason I think it's a bad idea. I just think zero rating, that's what they call this. Zero rating is a bad idea in general. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We're going to take a little break, come back, and take more of your calls. Again, I point you to the website, techguylabs.com. Everything I talk about is there, including links to sites like OpenSignal. It also has a link to our great chat room. And we'd love having you in there. irc.twit.tv. More calls right after this. We'll be right back.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Hey, look at that. Look at that. There's a big head floating over my shoulder. Either it's the Wizard of Oz or Dick DiBartolo is in the house. Mad Magazine's maddest writer. Hello, Dickie D.
How are you, pal?
Oh, it is. Whew, I was worried it was the Wizard of Oz.
Did you say the wizard is odd? What did you say?
Hey, before we go on a sad note, one of the greats, the Mad Magazine greats. You know, I didn't realize this, but you're the young kid over there, aren't you?
Yeah. Yes, in a way.
Yeah, some of them are getting on. And Jack Davis, is Jack Davis, right, who passed?
Yes, Jack Davis.
Very famous.
91. Yeah. If you don't know the name, you will know his work. He did TV guide covers, Time covers, Mad covers, album covers. He was a lot of ads. He was very, very
beautiful illustrator.
A lot of years, yes, sir.
And one of the founders, right? I mean, he was there at the very beginning.
He was there, yes, very early on. Very early on.
Passed away at the age of 91.
91.
He's not the only nonagenarian who's working there, though.
No.
Jaffe's, what?
Yes. 95 and still doing the Mad Fold-In.
It's amazing. And Dick's only in his late 80s, so.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. So,
You started writing for them when you were a high school kid.
Yes, yes. So I was reading it saying, this is funny. And then after the third issue, I go, I don't want to read this. I want to write this.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So that's what it was.
But Dick also joins us each and every week to talk about crazy gadgets, because not only is he a writer for Mad Magazine, but he's also kind of a gadget hound. We call him the Gizwiz.
Yeah, I like crazy things. So I have another electric vehicle for you to buy.
I spent so much on the Tesla. I don't know. Okay, I'm listening.
It's just another $1,000. So
I have a Segway. I have a Tesla. I have one of those little hoverboards that's closeted in the garage so it won't blow up.
Do you have a moto bag?
What's that?
The moto bag, the luggage that drives you.
Okay, I'm playing ignorant, but I saw your video earlier this week, and I couldn't believe it.
I know. You know, 10 years ago at the hardware show, we laughed and laughed about cruising cooler,
right,
the ice chest you get on, right, and drive around. 10 years later, they're producing bigger and faster models.
And I've seen them in the wild. I've seen people riding them.
Yes. Well, moto bag, to tell you the truth, I'm worried about that because if you have a cruising cooler, you're probably riding along the beach or in your backyard or a back path. I don't see how airports are going to really
Wait a minute. This is a airport? This is luggage you ride around in the airport?
This is luggage with a motor inside.
They say it's TSA and FAA approved. I find that kind of hard
to
believe.
Well, the bag, believe it or not, it fits in an overhead compartment.
Now, how do people react at the airport when you're scooting around in your luggage?
Yes. Now, that's the thing that I fear, that, you know, you're going to start knocking people over.
It goes how fast?
It goes 8 miles an hour.
What?
So there's a switch for indoor and outdoor. So I assume if you do indoor, it probably knocks the speed way down. The thing empty weighs 19 pounds.
Oh, because it's got to have batteries in there, right?
Yes. I mean, it's an engineering marvel.
I guess.
On the other hand, it's not coming till January. However, on, let's see, I can't remember if
they're
on.
It's Indiegogo.
Indiegogo.
Yeah.
They wanted $50,000. Leah, they're almost up to $250,000.
I'm not surprised. I would love one of these.
Oh, would you? Now, you wouldn't be embarrassed riding through the airport?
If you own a Segway and you're not embarrassed, you're not going to be embarrassed this.
Okay.
I'm more worried about getting arrested riding through the airport.
I think if a lot of people buy them and start using them, that sooner or later
they'll be banned.
And then you're stuck with they're $1,000.
Oh, yikes.
They are $995 for the early adopters. Then the list price, I believe, when they go in the marketplace, is going to be $1,200.
How much luggage do they hold?
You know what? It says that the motor and components take up 15%
That's not bad.
of of the area, which is not bad. No. And it fits in an overhead. So it's 22 long by 9 wide by 14 tall. And in one of the videos, they actually show you putting it in one of those airline sizing devices and that it fits. So, you know, I don't know cubic inches. It's 2,000 cubic inches of storage capacity.
These are going to be banned in a hot second. There's no way.
I think so.
It's just because there's a lot of people and crowds in an airport. And if you're riding around on a scooter at 8 miles an hour.
Yeah, especially you and I. You go through San Francisco.
Which out of is, the way, out of the way.
Yeah,
yes. I can't not go brakes on this thing.
And Newark Airport is also wall-to-wall people. So you and maybe if you're leaving Palm Springs or something, a small airport, it'll be okay.
You see Segways, but it's always the security police that are riding those. I've never seen a Rascal scooter or a motorized wheelchair of any kind in an airport. I mean, they must allow those. I don't know. It seems like you would be stopped at the door.
You know, wait a minute. Your Segway can be controlled by your phone, right?
No, just by my thoughts.
Oh, okay. Oh, you got the advanced one. No. Can't you drive your Segway?
You can't drive your Segway with your phone.
No. Leo, that's coming. At CES, they said they were coming out with the butler attachment.
Yeah, the new Ninebot, which you steer with your knees, can be controlled with your phone. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't buy that.
Leo, put your luggage on it and drive your luggage through the airport.
Yeah. Motorized assist would be all right as long as you, you know, kind of, they wouldn't even know you're holding the handle.
No, that's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah, this is a little.
I don't think the airlines want you to bring those big lithium ion batteries on either.
No.
I think that's
going to be another drawback.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
Anyway, it's
MODOBAG.com. You know, the best way to go. Go to Dick's website, gizwiz.biz. He's got so many gadgets there. You're just on, I know, ABC World News Now. Showing off, what were you showing off? Summer stuff?
No, I was showing off every kind of LED, which you resisted buying.
The king of LEDs.
The chaser lights.
He's the king. I did. Thank God I avoided buying the chaser lights.
Okay.
But you'll find out more there. You also play the What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win an autographed copy by Mad Magazine. You know, this will be really valuable when Dick kicks a bucket. So get in there.
Yeah.
No, that's mean. That's so mean.
It's weeks away. Weeks away.
You got 30, 40 years. Easy. Right. But do hold on to those autographed copies of Mad Magazine. All you got to do is name. It looks like maybe it'd be one of those arrows that they put on the floor to guide you in the moto bag. I don't know what that is. It's interesting. Can you tell him what it is? So he's got 12 autographed magazines for the right answer. Up to 24 for the best wrong answer. So there you go. Give them a wrong answer. Your chances are better. Gizwiz.biz. And don't forget to gizwiz.tv for Dick's fabulous podcast. Thanks, Dick. We'll talk again next week.
Okay, buddy. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. Time to say so long. It's been fun. I'll be back next time, and I hope you will too. Thanks to Nathan Staten, our musical director, Heather Hammon, the Phone Ranger. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on. And on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.